Chapter 84. The Edge of the Map. We continued to inch our way through the Eld. Every day began with the hope of finding traces of a trail. Every night ended with disappointment. The shine was definitely off the apple, and our group was slowly being overtaken by irritation and backbiting. Any fear Dedan once felt for me had worn paper thin, and he pushed at me constantly. He wanted to buy a bottle of brand using the mayor's purse. I refused. He thought we didn't need to keep nightly watches, merely set up a trip line. I disagreed. Every small battle I won made him resent me more, and his low grumbling steadily increased as our search wore on. It was never anything so bold as a direct confrontation, just a sporadic peppering of snide comments and sulky insubordination. On the other hand, Tempe and I were slowly moving towards something like friendship. His Aturan was becoming better, and my Ademic had progressed to the point where I could actually be considered inarticulate, as opposed to just confusing. I continued to mimic Tempe as he performed his dance, and he continued to ignore me. Now that I'd been doing it for a while, I recognized a hint of martial flavor to it. A slow motion with one arm gave the impression of a punch. A glacial raising of the foot resembled a kick. My arms and legs no longer shook from the effort of moving slowly along with him, but I was still irritated by how clumsy I was. I hate nothing so much as doing a thing badly. For example, there was a portion halfway through that looked easy as breathing. Tempe turned, circled his arms, and took a small step. But whenever I tried to do the same, I inevitably found myself stumbling. I had tried a half dozen different ways of placing my feet, but nothing made any difference. But the day after I told my loose screw story, as Dedan eventually came to refer to it, Tempe stopped ignoring me. This time, after I stumbled, he stopped and faced me. His fingers flicked, disapproval, irritation. "Go back," he said, settling into the dance position that came before my stumble. I went into the same position and tried to mimic him. I lost my balance again and had to shuffle my feet to keep from stumbling. "My feet are stupid," I muttered in Ademic, curling the fingers on my left hand, embarrassment.
"No!"
Tempe grabbed my hips in his hands and twisted them. Then he pushed my shoulders back and slapped at my knee, making me bend it.
"Yes!"
I tried moving forward again and felt the difference. I still lost my balance, but only a little.
"No!"
he said again.
"Watch!"
He tapped his shoulder.
"This!"
He stood directly in front of me, barely a foot away, and repeated the motion. He turned, his hands made a circle to the side, and his shoulder pushed into my chest. It was the same motion you would make if you were trying to push open a door with your shoulder. Tempe wasn't moving very quickly, but his shoulder pushed me firmly aside. It wasn't rough or sudden, but the force of it was irresistible, like when a horse brushes up against you on a crowded street. I moved through it again, focusing on my shoulder. I didn't stumble. Since we were the only ones at the camp, I kept the smile from my face and gestured happiness.
"Thank you."
Understatement. Tempe said nothing. His face was blank, his hands still. He merely went back to where he had stood before and began his dance again from the beginning, facing away from me. I tried to remain stoic about the exchange, but I took this as a great compliment. Had I known more about the Ardem, I would have realized it was far more than that. Tempe and I came over a rise to find Martin waiting for us. It was too early for lunch, so hope rose in my chest as I thought that finally, after all these long days of searching, he might have caught the bandit's trail.
"I wanted to show you this,"
Martin said, gesturing to a tall, sprawling, fern-like plant that stood a dozen feet away.
"A bit of a rare thing, been years since I've seen one."
"What is it?"
"It's called Arn's Blade," he said proudly, looking it over. "You'll need to keep an eye out. Not many folk know about them, so it might give us a clue if there are any more of them about."
Martin looked back and forth between us eagerly.
"Well,"
he said at last.
"What's so special about it?" I asked dutifully.
Martin smiled.
"The Arn's Blade is interesting because it can't tolerate folk," he said. "If any part of it touches your skin, it'll turn red as fall leaves in a couple of hours. Redder than that, bright as your mercenary reds. Martin gestured to Tempe. And then that whole plant will dry up and die.
Really?
I asked, no longer having to feign interest. Martin nodded.
A drop of sweat would kill it just the same, which means most times it will die just from touching a person's clothes, armor too, or a stick you've been holding, or a sword.
He gestured to Tempe's hip.
Some people say it will die if you so much as breathe on it, Martin said. But I don't know if that's the truth.
Martin turned to lead us away from the Anne's blade.
This is an old, old piece of forest. You don't see the blade anywhere near where folk have settled. We're off the edge of the map here.
We're hardly on the edge of the map, I said. We know exactly where we are. Martin snorted.
Huh. Maps don't just have outside edges. They have inside edges. Holes. Folk like to pretend they know everything about the world. Rich folk especially. Maps are great for that. On this side of the line is Baron Taxtwice's field. On that side is Count Uptomoney's land.
Martin spat.
You can't have blanks on your map, so the folks who draw them shade in a piece and write the Eld.
He shook his head.
You might as well burn a hole right through the map for what good that does. This forest is big as Vintus. Nobody owns it. You head off in the wrong direction in here, you'll walk 100 miles and never see a road, let alone a house or ploughed field. There are places around here that have never felt the press of a man's foot or heard the sound of his voice.
I looked around. It looks the same as most other forests I've seen.
A wolf looks like a dog, Martin said simply. But it's not. A dog is...
He paused.
What's that word for animals that are around people all the time, cows and sheep or such?
Domesticated?
That's it, he said, looking around. A farm is domesticated. A garden, a park. Most forests, too. Folks hunt mushrooms or cut firewood or take their sweethearts for a little rub and cuddle.
He shook his head and reached out to touch the rough bark of a nearby tree. The gesture was oddly gentle, almost loving.
Not this place. This place is old and wild. It doesn't care one thin sliver of a damn about us. If these folk we're hunting get the jump on us, they won't even have to bury our bodies. We'll lie on the ground for 100 years and no one will come close to stumbling on our bones.
I turned where I stood, looking at the rise and fall of the land, the worn rocks, the endless ranks of trees. I tried not to think about how the mayor had sent me here, like moving a stone on a tackboard. He had sent me to a hole in the map, a place where no one would ever find my bones.